Coming up on Chasing the Natty, the CFF community has been grinding out draft after draft, best ball after best ball, and from all of those, we are able to generate our first ADP for the 2024 college fantasy football season. I have on with me Chris Kay from our CFF team here at Campus Decanton to dive into this ADP. We'll be pointing out the trends we're noticing and analyzing some of those players that we think are both going too high and also too low in drafts. All that and more coming right after this. This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast. All right, welcome in everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Monday morning, as always. We are the college fantasy football podcast on the Campus Decanton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday morning during the offseason, 6 a.m. sharp every week. If you want to support the great work we're doing here, head on over to campusdecanton.com. Subscribe there with one of our sensational tiers. You'll find everything you need for your CFF, Devy, C2C, IDP, betting needs, pretty much whatever you want to play when it comes to college football. We have rankings, we got articles, we got tools, and even more than that. You can also find me in the show on Twitter. I'm at @CFF_Jared. The show is at Chasing the Natty, and the very handsome, but I imagine very tired from his wonderful new addition to the family. The sir to my right over here is Mr. Chris K at Realist Chris K on Twitter. Chris, how are you doing, sir? You getting enough sleep?
I'm good. It's just, you know, I've heard a lot of horror stories. This is much better. What I'm doing and getting with my little girl is much better than what I've heard others. But I mean, it's just, anytime you're up from like midnight to 3 or 4 every other day, it's just not good. You know, I'm getting 6 to 7 hours, which is a blessing, it sounds like, but it's tough going back to sleep, waking up and back and forth. So one day you'll know, Jared, and we'll be able to give you some tips and tricks. Maybe we got a lot of fathers in this, especially girl dad fathers at Campus Decanton. So we'll hook you up in due time.
And between you and Austin, I think, I can't remember if we have another
Nate's
one.
Nate's got
way.
A little girl.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. Nate's had his little girl for a couple of years. And then I know Colin just got married. So I imagine that's probably a couple of years down the line there. Y'all don't have to worry about me for at least half a decade here. So we're taking our time with all that good stuff. But again, looking forward to it one day. Yeah, I never really thought about like the fact that like this, the whole like getting 6 hours of sleep, like, yeah, it sounds great, but then when you realize it's like 3 hours and then 3 hours with like a 2 hour break in between, like, yeah, probably not fantastic.
But I could have timed it better because I was just telling my wife the other day, I was like, man, what if college football, the video game was out? Like while I was on paternity leave in general, I'm off of work for 3 months. And if I could have, wow. I could just be playing so much college football, but I'll take March Madness in the beginning of baseball season as a nice consolation prize.
And tons of scouring the CFF ADP that we have been putting together. Okay. You've had plenty of time to do that, I imagine. But
yeah, I've had a good time. I've actually written more in the last like 3 weeks than I have in the last, like the last three off seasons, which is funny. And a lot of it is just purely based off of like early analysis of ADPs by the different positions, quarterback battles, things like that. So it's been fun to take advantage of a little bit of the extra time during the day.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you have not already, go to campuskent.com and check out some of Kay's recent stuff. He's had some really, really good articles pointing out some late round flyers at wide receiver that you can take advantage of. Looking at some Big Ten running back battles, I know you took a look at there, a very interesting article, kind of expanding on what Mitch Hart used to talk about with zagging while others are zigging. You pretty much pointed out that in three different Big Ten backfields right now, the RB2 goes so much later than what we think is the RB1, but in reality, there's about a 50-50 shot in terms of who's going to be the main guy in some of those backfields. So I imagine we'll touch on some of that here today. Yeah, I think we can go ahead and pretty much dive right on into it, okay? Let's go ahead and talk a little bit about a couple of the things we have coming up with Chasing the Natty and a couple of the things going around going on with Campus Can. Again, Defending the Natty, we've got our third episode coming out here later this month. Should be the 15th of March. Nate and I are going to be looking at our CFF Dynasty rankings, which I imagine a lot of you are going to be very interested in. We're going to talk about how we came up with those, and we'll also talk about and guys that we're very different on. In addition, again, lots of stuff going on with a lot of CFF Dynasty leagues, trading, stuff like that. We'll talk about some of the things we've been doing and what we do to get prepared for the season, stuff like that. So be able to look out for that. In addition to that, as soon as I not turn off the graphic, the CF or the C2C freshman and supplemental guide is now available at campusagenton.com. Came out March 1st. It is available, $20 for everybody there. Easily one of the most unique and important guides that we put out here at the company every single year, especially if you're playing a C2C and or a CFF Dynasty League. It's a great place to go start, learn about these freshmen. And the great part is, unlike 247, On3, Rivals, and everything like that, we specifically focus on their fantasy impact going forward for college football and also, again, for C2C purposes, looking at them going into their NFL potential. So it's an incredible guide. Love doing it. We at the CFF team wrote up all of these supplemental players as well. So guys that are available in 10% of leagues or less, absolutely go check that out. Well worth the money there. And then last but not least, again, this is the time of year where everybody's still trying to figure out, all right, who came back, who's transferred, where did they go, and everything like that. Easily the best place you can go to do that is the Returning Production Profiles as part of the C2C Winning Edge package we have at campusofkenton.com. All 134 teams, yes, including Kennesaw State, our new friends to the FBS this year. It'll have everything you need to learn exactly who is here, who's gone off to the NFL, where do these transfers go. Easily a great one-stop shop. I use it all the time for preparing for these shows to make sure that there's nothing that I'm missing regarding going into drafts, going and talking about different rooms and stuff like that. So absolutely go and check that out. All right, Kay, enough of my spiel. Sorry, I had to make you sit through that. I know you normally skip that whenever you listen. But let's get to the fun part here, Nate. Kay, let's get to the fun part here, Kay. Up on the screen, I have the top 24 at each of the positions. So if you're watching this on YouTube, a free look at some of the early ADP here, some early round guys and everything like that. If you want to see the full ADP, you can go over to campusagenton.com. We will have our early ADP up as of the time that this releases. I know we're releasing at some point this weekend, so absolutely go check it out. Dig it into yourselves. But up on the screen again, top 24 at each of the positions here. Kay, looking at what we have here, what is a trend that you kind of notice right off the bat here?
The quarterback's the easiest one, right? Like, there's three superstar types, and then I think conceivably you could have the next 20 guys be in a complete different order based on talking to 100 different people. There's a lot of, like, you know, personal preference in terms of like volume passing quarterbacks, like a, you know, like a Ward or like a, maybe like a Preston Stone, Miller Moss types. And then you just have like these crazy upside runners like Avery Johnson and Rainer that we, and Nico at Tennessee, like guys that we've seen like how impressive they can be and what their upside could be, but not necessarily seen a lot of it, right? So I think that next group of 20 is being drafted significantly later, obviously, as we see here, but it's also, you could put it in pretty much any order. And I think people would be pretty close to agreeing with or understanding why you did rank them that way. You know, I think Nate, I said something about what a quarterback yesterday, and Nate had made a mention that he has five or six guys that were not even in my top 25 that I posted or that I showed him. So that just shows you the depth of that second tier. That first tier is very clear. The second tier, it's a huge group of players. A
lot of personal preference for sure in that tier. And we have a couple of guys that we'll be talking about that are in that tier that, quite frankly, we somewhat believe they shouldn't even be in that second tier, but also at the same time, like you said, it'll come down to personal preference a little bit there. Let's look at the running backs and wide receivers, I think, next year, because really this year, I think people are really big. Like, so many people have bought into the idea of wait on QB. You don't need to reach up and grab for QBs too much in the fourth, fifth, sixth, or in the second, third round, stuff like that. and load up on the skill positions pretty early on, especially at running back. I've already talked about that this year is a very strong year for running backs, but just like every year, it cuts off at a certain point. So a lot of people, it seems to me, are really buying into the idea of just load up on as many of these workhorse running backs as you can early on, and then wait for something like quarterback in tight end, especially where it feels like, as you pointed out, Kay, those at least second tier guys really feel very close to one another. So you don't really miss out if you're waiting super long on those guys. What about you, Kay? You've been in a couple best balls this year. Do you kind of follow that same pattern of loading up on running backs and waiting a little bit on quarterbacks, tight ends, maybe even wide receiver a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. I'm a pretty conservative drafter when it comes to like outlook and potential, right? I always, and it's bitten me a little bit. I've really done a good job of drafting quarterbacks in years past, but the flex positions have just been difficult. And I think part of that is like, I have a hard time seeing and trusting the upside and taking shots. But I think like there's a good group of 8 or 9, maybe 10, 12 guys that like they have upside and they have a high floor. So those are like clear guys that I want to target, especially at, and then also at like receiver, right? I think receiver has the same kind of group where it's like 7, 8, 9 guys that are really good. And then it, you know, then it becomes kind of like quarterbacks where it's like, all right, well, where is your preference on, you know, are you going to take a shot on a guy that's maybe a little less proven? Are you going to go a little bit more proven? So it is a really good group of running backs, which is nice. You know, I don't remember the last season or 2 years ago, the top 10 being like so nice, like such a mm-hmm. good group of running backs, but I certainly can't complain at the top. It'd be hard not to take at least one in the top 2 rounds.
Yeah. I've at least what I've noticed in some of the drafts that I've been in so far is that most of my favorite drafts, like you said, seem to have at least taken a running back in at least the first or second round. I'm not as big of a fan as the like double wide receiver start that I've liked in the last couple of years, like trying to land some elite guys, especially on like that first, second turn, grabbing two elite wide receivers in that turn. This year, I'm loving the back end of the first round in terms of where I'm starting, just because that's where I can easily nail two elite running backs in my mind. Like in the last best ball draft that I did, I was able to land RJ Harvey and Taj Brooks as my first two picks, and holy crap, I couldn't feel any better set up going into the year than getting those guys. Versus like, even if you have like the first pick and you are getting Ashton Jeanty with your first pick, which is obviously incredible, even by that point, the elite options are kind of flying off the board by the time it makes it back to you on the 2-3 turn.
Yeah, I have two thoughts there. I just did a draft where I drafted first, and Jeanty is like a no-brainer. But that second end of second round, beginning of third round, it felt like I was just outside the cusp of those guys, right? Like I took Baxter, which I like Baxter. There's nothing wrong with him. Sure. But like there's some, when you're looking at all the different options that you could be taking if you're, you know, middle to the end of the first round type pick, there's a lot of risk compared to like a Harvey or a Brooks. And then I took Concepcion from NC State. I didn't love it. There's reason to love him in the third round-ish. But it felt like a weird spot, you know, mm-hmm. and the other thought I was thinking was like in previous years, you always had multiple quarterbacks that could sneak into the second round or third round. This is cut and dry. There's three quarterbacks and then everybody's going after the same guys in the second and third round. So I maybe one thing that we have to figure out in the next couple of months is like, how do we differ? How do we find an edge? You know, where can we find a way to get that edge on drafting? Because everyone's going to be doing the exact same thing until someone proves otherwise, because there will be three quarterbacks picked in the first round, or at least the top 15 picks. And there won't be another one picked for 30 picks. Like that's almost a given. So it'll be really interesting to see how we can find some zigging and zagging there. Like we kind of already mentioned.
No, I definitely agree. And whether that is, like you said, like finding specific guys that kind of fall into that range that you like, so it's no longer as weird of a spot. Because, like, in my opinion, like in years past, like that 2-3 turn was always great because, like you said, people would draft quarterbacks and that would push down at least one running back or wide receiver that you really, really like to get back on that turn. It really does not feel like we're getting that this year at all. Like, and it was a little deceptive in the beginning because a guy like DJ Giddens was going in like the third round. And I'm like, okay, I can get behind DJ Giddens in the third round because that means I can grab him on that 2-3 turn. I feel great if I can get DJ Giddens with Ashton Jeanty. Well, he's quickly moved up into the second round. Guys like Sean Atkins Tej Johnson, they're kind of moving up into that range. Pofele Ashlock. Devin Neal was a guy that was going kind of third round. Jaden Ott is still a guy I think you can get in that 2-3 turn where you can feel pretty good about yourself. But at the same time, like, even he feels like just a little bit of a step down compared to some of those elite guys.
Yeah, he doesn't feel like the old second round running back. You know, it's, you know, last year there was five or six quarterbacks, you know, someone really likes Penix or, you know, Nick loved Joe Milton. So you could always guarantee he would take him in the first couple of rounds. Like, in, like you said, a guy would fall back and you'd benefit from it. If you were of the practice of waiting on quarterbacks. So it'll be interesting to see as these go. I've only done a couple of these and I'm in like the 18th round and I have no idea who to take. Like, it's just a wild, wild west after like 12 rounds, in my opinion. So it's been good to get into these. A couple guys have been really pushing them, which has been fun to get into. But yeah, it's an interesting early group. I don't feel like I felt more confident last year than I do right now. So got to get some reps in.
No, absolutely. And again, just, I guess it'll be a small little break here in terms of me just advancing to everybody out there. Like, if you want to get involved with these drafts, these best balls, like $5 best balls, I run them. Ryan Carpenter, he's at CarpG926 on Twitter. He's been running a ton of them. And in my opinion, they are the best way that if you don't have a ton of time to scour all of college football to try to find some hidden gems and everything, these are 30 round best balls. That's 360 players that are taken in every one of these drafts. That pretty much narrows down your pool of players to look at. Now, granted, it's still 360 players, but at least it kind of gives you one spot. Just doing one of these drafts will give you kind of a quick little window into, like, all right, these are the guys that I can be my starting point of terms of who I'm looking for. And look, if you're in a draft with somebody who you happen to respect, maybe it's a content creator, maybe it's somebody you've played with in a league before and everything that you know they do a good job in CFF, focus on their team. Take a look at what guys they're drafting and everything. It's a really, really good way to get to know the player pool, get to know the value of players, and again, for a relatively cheap cost. And again, maybe you win some money out of it because you just happen to draft a really, really good team. So with that being said, Kay, I think we start getting specific here. Again, we talked about some overall trends and everything like that, but people want names. People want us to talk about the players, and they want us to tell them who they're taking or who they're spending too much on, Kay. So I think we'll start off with the players who are being taken too high. We each put up a quarterback, we each put up a running back, and we each put up a wide receiver. So, Kay, start with you. Who is your quarterback that you think is going too high in drafts right now?
Oh, shoot. I thought you were going to do graphics and stuff. Give me one second.
Oh, no.
Cameron Ward. Right?
I was waiting for you to say the name first, and then I would throw out the graphics.
It's like, wait a second. I scrambled. Jared keeping me on my toes. I got to get on the show more often. Ward for me. And I was a known Ward hater, and he kind of proved me wrong last year. He was also going like pretty high. But Washington State's a different offense than Miami, right? Like, Miami to me is not going to produce like big time quarterback play. He kind of fell into some rushing touchdowns, it felt like. And ultimately, I just have a hard time thinking that he's going to be able to reproduce what he did in a different offense, right? He's got to learn a new offense, potentially a second or third offense in his last 4 years. So he doesn't fit my mold of run, not run first, but kind of run dependent quarterbacks. And so he's an easy fade for me. He's going around quarterback 18. I think I have him more around like 28 to 30-ish. So I've warmed up to him a little bit. Last year, I think I was in the low 40s, and this year I'm in the mid to late 20s on a guy like Cameron Ward.
Yeah, like you mentioned, he's going QB 18 right now. I have him as my QB 30, so right around the same range as UK. To me, he's a very system dependent quarterback, right? So like the two years that he went off, he was in Eric Moore's system at the FCS level, which we showed that he didn't quite work out as well at the FBS level in Eric Moore's system. But then Ben Arbuckle comes along, puts him in a much more favorable situation with his system, and Ward's able to jump up further. So to me, the system matters a lot here in terms of where Ward's going to be. I don't think he is the type of quarterback that can transcend whatever system he's playing in. So we got to look at who's he working with there at Miami. Well, obviously Mario Cristobal, but Shane Dawson's their offensive coordinator. He comes from the Dana Holgerson coaching tree, which sounds great at first, but every time Shane Dawson's had his turn to replicate that system at different spots, he has not been able to. And it kind of makes me worried about what Ward's going to be able to do at Miami, especially given the fact that Tyler Van Dyke, who in my opinion is a pretty good quarterback, was at his best last year at a QB 41 pace. So unless Ward is going to do something that Dyke can't do, which is run, which Ward seems to be able to a little bit. Again, he ran for quite a bit last year. He just got sacked a ton. Like, I think he got 35 times last year. So he was constantly getting hit behind the goal line or behind the line of scrimmage there. So he's a bit better of a runner than I think we're giving him credit for. So that could boost him up a little bit here. But I don't think it's necessarily going to get him to go from being a QB 41, which, again, Van Dyke was on last year, to a guy that's going to finish in the top 20. Feels like a very safe quarterback, a guy you draft as like your third quarterback off the board to make sure that, you know, if your dual threat guys have a bad game or their passing's off one game, it feels like Ward's going to be a safe 20 points per game kind of guy. I just don't think that he's worth drafting up there in the top 20.
He also, you know, I think we you're right. I think he is a little bit more of a runner. The sacks hurt him. Who knows? Sacks are just so unpredictable, right? We can look at Nick's winning, you know, Nick's returning database. That's, you know, Winning Edge returning database, and that certainly helps, right? But that's not like a 1-to-1. Hey, I know for sure he's not going to get sacked. I think we all agree he's pretty bad in the pocket, like in terms of pocket presence. So maybe he's causing some of these things. But also, he had 8 touchdowns rushing on 120 carries. That's a pretty steep, like, if you're including sacks, you know, he basically had 8 touchdowns on 85 carries, like 85 true carries. That is a crazy touchdown rate. And you cut that number in half, and that automatically takes him 2 points, you know, per game down. And so that really matters, and you can't really rely on something like that, I think. And this goes back earlier to my, like, group of 20 or so players in that second tier of quarterbacks. I just like all of those guys much better. Like, I just think that they either possess a higher floor, there's less risk maybe because there's no difference in coaching changes or personnel changes, or maybe they have more upside. Like, I would take Avery Johnson over Cam Ward every day of the week, and they're probably fairly similar, or Rainer, those types of guys, way before I would take a Cameron Ward, because at least the upside is game-breaking.
No, I definitely agree. I need to look at Van Dyke last year again. I mentioned that he was on a decent pace to start the season, but like his best game last year was 33.76 points, and I believe that came against a G5 team there. And then otherwise, it was very up and down for him. And then another point to your point, Kay, about the rushing touchdowns and everything, there was no running back really at Washington State last year. Right. Like, he's going to Miami, and granted, none of their running backs can seem to stay healthy for more than 5 minutes. But at the same time, like, they have a stable of running backs that are going to be able to pound it in better than Ward will be able to, which was not the case at Washington State last year. Part of the reason why I think Ward got so much goal line carries last year. So
agreed.
I think that's a very good point. I'm not drafting him. I don't think I've not drafted him once so far this year. Cause like you said, like, in this range, this eighth round, I'm probably taking, let me look at the ADP real quick. Who all goes around him? I'll take a shot on Jackson Arnold, who goes one pick ahead of him in ADP. Avery Johnson, who goes 4 picks ahead of him. Jalen Raynor, I'd take the shot on him.
What about Chandler Morris?
Like, Chandler Morris,
I don't need running out of Chandler Morris. I just get straight volume. Why,
exactly.
If anything, that feels like a safer option than Cam Ward, considering, wasn't it Chandler Rogers or whatever his name is, Rogers that transferred to Cal? He had a crazy year, and none of us think he's any good, right? So there just feels like more options that are better for for multiple reasons at that spot.
No, I definitely agree. All right, let's move on to my quarterback that I think is going too high. And this is where I put in the disclaimer in the fact that just because I'm saying the guy's going too high in CFF does not mean I think this is a bad quarterback. Does not mean that I think that they are like a terrible value or anything like that. But the Noah Fifita hype train is starting to get a little bit out of control, in my opinion. His ADP currently is QB10. You're talking about sixth-round quarterback, again, clearly in that second tier, not one of the top three guys. People are waiting enough here. I have him as my QB26. Again, I love Fifita. A top-10 quarterback, he is not. His skill set does not lend itself to being a top-10 quarterback. His system does not lend itself to being a top-10 quarterback. Even at his best last year, after Fifita got the full-time job and they were just chucking it all over the field, he was at a QB24 pace. He is a safe passer. He's going to throw a ton. I think he's a very good pick for a lot of people who are looking for that second option at quarterback. But I would not feel comfortable at all taking him as my first quarterback off the board, especially if I waited to get quarterbacks off the board. Like, if I didn't grab a guy like Dylan Gabriel, Kadon Salter, or Byron Brown early on. A lot of this goes back to Nate Marquise's QB talking point, where either you're going to throw it 45 to 50 times a game, or you got to show me some ability to run. And Fifita just hasn't really shown me that. Again, maybe that changes this year. Again, he did not run a ton in high school either, but Brent Brennan is known for liking to have some running quarterbacks, so maybe that'll change this year. Maybe they kind of switch things up. But it just doesn't make any sense for me to be him this high. He's going two to three spots behind Jaxson Dart. That makes no sense to me. He's going ahead of guys like Will Howard, Jalen Milroe, Jackson Arnold, all guys that can run, all guys that are probably going to be in offenses that put up more points per game on a regular basis. I love Fifita. He's a great QB2, QB3 option. No way am I wanting him to be my number one quarterback on my team. What about you, Kay?
I'm with you. This is the other guy I was considering to include from too high. You know, it's one thing to not be a runner, right? Like Cam Ward's gotten, you know, bit by some sacks. He still ended up with like 100 plus yards, 8 touchdowns. Fifita had negative rushing yards on the season and 0 touchdowns. He's also only like 5'10", 5'11". Mm-hmm. At least Cam Ward, like you could maybe project some QB sneaks, right? Because he's a big guy.
Big dude.
You can't do that with Fifita. I think this is one of those bowl game things where I thought him and Darnold looked incredible in that bowl game.
Oh yeah.
It felt like that game was on like 1.25 speed. Like everybody looked faster. And maybe it was something in the whiskey. I don't know, but everybody looked great in that game. I was impressed by both quarterbacks, but Fifita's not going to get the volume. And if he's essentially a negative runner, you might, that is it. I like Fifita, like you said. Like if this is like QB 25, like QB 30, I'm definitely in. QB 10, I mean, QB 10 is like you gotta have a huge number out of your QB 1. He is not putting up a huge number. You know, it's just not possible. You can clip this and save this for future, but I would be shocked if he is a QB 1 by season's end.
I would be willing to put a bet on that as well.
Tattoo bet? You and Mox?
No tattoo bets. I put my foot down on tattoo bets. I don't do that.
I'm with you on that.
I'll go back to singing and take 3 years to do it again.
Yeah, I think it's one of these funny things where you kind of put the disclaimer. It's like we don't not like Fifita.
Yeah.
We just don't like him where he's being picked. That one just is, I was shocked that he was QB10, like that was his ADP, but there's enough drafts in there where that is kind of becoming an early consensus.
Yeah, it seems like it, but again, like just compared to the guys that are going around him, I just don't get it. All right, let's talk about some running backs, Kay. Let's talk about a running back that you think is going too high, and I can't accuse you of homerism on this one. You're going negative on one of your boys here, so Kay, we'll throw it up to you here. Who's your running back that you think is going too high?
It's Donovan Edwards. You know, I thought he was picked too high last year, and I was correct. It was a weird year. You know, the Corum just got everything. They just locked him in for at least a touchdown and 15 to 20 touches, which is a little bit surprising with how they've played blowouts in the past. But running back 14 is like very steep. He is a bigger guy, and Michigan likes to run with bigger guys between the tackles. The basic, right? Jerome Moore, the offensive coordinator, now the head coach. So the philosophy is going to be the same. We've seen Sharon Moore be the head coach. In a sense, I would imagine Jim Harbaugh created or helped mold the game plan going into those final three games of the season. But
For sure.
certainly Moore had a strong hand in that. They want to control the football, play good defense, and commit to the run. We saw, it's funny because Edwards had this big stat line against Washington. I'm a Washington, Michigan fan. I'm wearing the national championship shirt right now. Like, we won because of Donovan Edwards, not because of Blake Corum, which is funny to think about because I think Corum won like MVP or whatever. But like, he scored a touchdown by running into the butts of his offensive linemen. It sucked the defense in incorrectly, and then he's fast enough to break away. Like, he is a big shot, long runner. Kind of like like a poor man's Saquon, right? Like Saquon Barkley will go for 2 yards 3 times in a row, and then he'll go for 80, at least back in the day when he was in his elite prime. And that's kind of like what Edwards is, and that doesn't line up with Michigan. This is one of the groups that I talked about in an article on Canvas to Canton was these running back groups where the second running back is an extreme value. I think Khalil Mullings, the guy is like 6'3", 240. He was a running back, turned linebacker. He came back in. What's really interesting is that in that game against Washington in the national championship, he came in before Donovan Edwards. Like, he got two carries before Donovan Edwards did, which shows some faith and some trust. I think he even got a target or a catch. He had a big catch in the Rose Bowl. Like, I wouldn't be shocked at all if this is a 1A, 1B. And both of them get 14 carries. And while Edwards can make a big play with 14 carries, I don't want that at RB14. If I'm right, and this is probably one of the ones that I'm ranking far away from the ADP. He's probably in my 40s. I would say for actually mid 30s, because they're obviously we want a Michigan running back. Maybe I'm wrong. So you got to pipe some of that in there to the ranking, but I wouldn't be shocked at all if Mullings outproduces Edwards in 2024.
I'm of the same mindset. I have him as my RB28. It has room to go down because again, it's a pretty deep running back class. And so if I start catching wind that Mullings is looking really, really good in spring practices and everything, yeah, Edwards will be taking a hit. But until then, again, I have to, in my opinion, still rank him ahead of Mullings because he has been the RB2 for Michigan for so long. But there are some serious red flags here. Last year, Edwards in 10 games had under 3.5 yards per carry. Just abysmal vision at times, could not get it going. Like you said, broke away some big runs every once in a while, but it's like you get like 2 to 3 of those games from him every single year, and then otherwise, it's just not there whatsoever. No goal line work ever, also last year was a really big red flag to me. Like Corum getting literally every touch within the 5-yard line, never turning to Edwards was seriously concerning, considering the fact that, like you mentioned, Edwards is not a small dude. Like, if he was like a 5'9", 195-pound back, I'd kind of understand, let's turn to Corum and everything like that. But he's bigger than Corum. He's bigger than Corum by a good couple of inches and by about 5 pounds. And
Oh,
they.
more than that, he's 6'1", 210. Like,
That's what
that's
I'm
a
saying.
legitimate size running back. So it
Oh, yeah,
is
he's a big
concerning
dude.
that he rarely got those carries. He did have some short carries for touchdowns, but like they also scored 40 a game. So like, what's that? Does that number really matter?
Exactly. And then on top of everything else, we can't ignore just how much Michigan loses this year. You got a new quarterback, JJ McCarthy going off the draft, Jim Harbaugh obviously moving on. As you mentioned, again, Sharon Moore staying, being the new head coach, obviously a very big thing for Michigan there. But you're also losing all 5 starters along the offensive line. Like, for a dude like Edwards who already has kind of vision problems and needs those wide open holes to get through. That's going to be a tall order for Michigan moving forward. So, Edwards, I agree, definitely going way too high, especially when you got guys like Jordan James, Mekhi Hughes, Quentin Cooley, Malik Sherrod, even Quinshon Judkins at Ohio State. I take all of those guys over Edwards pretty easily. All right, let's move on to my running back that I think is going too high, and I'm going with Mr. Penny Boone, running back formerly of Toledo, now at Louisville. ADP has him at RB23. I have him outside my top 48 here because, guys, have we not learned our lesson with G5 transfer running backs? Have we not learned this lesson yet? I think there are paths for G5 guys to jump up to the Power 5 and have really good years, right? But just look at some of the guys, the big G5 transfers last year, right? Carson Steele going to UCLA. Brian Batty going from South Florida to Auburn. Sean Tyler going from Western Michigan to Minnesota. Aiden Robbins going from UNLV to BYU. All of them took massive hits from where they were at the G5 level. And even in the cases like where Carson Steele, where he was the RB1 for UCLA last year, still a massive hit because a guy like TJ Harden was pretty close to his equal in that backfield. And I think it is a massive mistake to think that Penny Boone's going to come into Louisville and automatically become what Jawar Jordan was for Louisville last year. Obviously, Jawar Jordan, top 24 running back for CFF last year. We've seen Jeff Brohm focus on one running back before, and it'd be great for CFF. I just don't think that we can automatically assume Boone will be that guy. Louisville has other options. Maurice Turner is a guy that I've liked the last couple of years, and he's a dude that's closer in size and skill set to Jawar Jordan. So if they want to directly one-to-one replace Jawar Jordan, in my opinion, he's closer to it than Boone is. You got Don Chaney Jr. coming over from Miami. I don't think he's the best running back in the world, but it is clear to me that, again, they're clearly bringing in two running backs to replace what they've lost. Three legit options there. Again, I'm trying to think of where to take this next, because like, it boils down to that. Like, I'm not taking a G5 transfer RB going up to the Power 5 in the top 24 running backs. Like, this is right in the range where I'm kind of okay with taking some shots on transfer running backs, because again, it's a deep RB class, but this is right in that range where things kind of get somewhat dicey. But I don't think, I don't understand how we arrived at Penny Boone being worth a full round more than a guy like Marcus Carroll going to Missouri, who in my opinion has less competition, or a guy like Mario Anderson who's going to Memphis, who's going down a level compared to where he was at. He's going from P5 to G5 and has less competition than either Carroll or Boone, and he's going a full round after Penny Boone. Doesn't help that a lot of other running backs in this range I like better. Again, Malik Sherrod, LaQuint Allen, Jalen White, Gavin Sawchuk, Abu Sama. I'll take every single one of those guys over taking a shot on Boone here. Okay, what do you think?
In lame fashion, I agree. I also heard about Penny Boone. I think the concerns here are that he really didn't do anything for like 3 years before his big year last year. Like, he was not good his first year at Toledo. He was average at best two seasons at Maryland. Like, I just have a hard time convincing myself that he's worth this draft position in a new offense at a higher level, right? Like, ACC isn't like groundbreaking, but it's certainly, I mean, there's a difference between, I think, G5 into P5 and MAC to P5. Like, yes, that's a huge step up. And like, sure, you can say Sean Tyler, it was tiny, or you know, some of these other transfers didn't make sense, so of course they failed. Penny Boone's a big guy. I still don't feel confident in him at this spot. And this is another offense that has to replace a bunch of guys. I think we're all confident in Jeff Brohm to figure it out, and Shuck feels good enough, and they've got enough pieces around to make that offense good. But they do lose a lot of players that were really relevant last year. So what all does that mean within a quick turnaround of one offseason? So yeah, you're not going to sell me on Penny Boone. He's about 10 or 15 spots too high for me in terms of running backs.
No, I would definitely agree. And like, the crazy thing is, like, I've been in a couple of drafts and I've seen him go as high as the second round. And I'm like, y'all, either you did not know that he transferred from Toledo, or like, you're assuming way too much about his ability to translate up to the Power 5 level. Because like you mentioned, Kay, like, at Maryland, he was struggling to get 4 yards per carry. And even at Toledo his first year, he was less than 4 yards per carry. So it was like, it didn't look great for him at first. He was part of a full committee. It wasn't until last year where things click. Now, obviously, guys get better at their position the more they play, don't get me wrong. But like, I don't know, over seven yards per carry and the MAC is not going to translate at all to the Power 5, in my opinion. So, all right. Okay, wide receiver time. Let's go. And we got two guys that are right at the top. So, like, we're going big fish hunting on these two wide receivers that we're going to try to knock down a peg here. Okay, who do you guys, your wide receiver that's too high?
Emeka Egbuka. I think you guys, you and Ethan touched on it a few weeks ago with the change in offensive coordinator with Chip Kelly. It really got my mind thinking about like how to potentially attack this whole offense. Chip Kelly, let's say that they go with Chip Kelly as like the full-on, hands-on offensive coordinator type. Ryan Day steps away from any sort of duties or influence. He has not produced studs at receiver. I think you mentioned like Bobo and some of these other guys at UCLA in the years past. Decent years, certainly not worth top three, four rounds, like it, let alone mid-second. If you want to say, okay, well, hey, let's say it's Ryan Day and Chip Kelly's just a guy, right? Like he's influencing, he's helping Ryan Day with the offense. Egbuka was not impressive to me last year. He had a good 2022, but if you look at like his overall numbers, I mean, he had CJ Stroud. He also tore up non-conference and then did nothing the rest of the way, except for the playoffs, you know, the playoff game. And I think also the game against Michigan. A lot of games that don't really matter, right? Like the non-conference games, I'm not paying a superstar talent to get me stud games in non-conference play. You can find guys that play Long Island University and Northwestern State, right? Yeah. I want the guys that are going to be in conference that are going to be producing their best games or at least the upper tier of their games. Egbuka has not done that. Ryan Day has called some of the most, like, I think Egbuka is obviously very talented. He just doesn't know how to use them properly. It almost feels like a bunch of bubble screens and short yardage targets. And maybe that's just subliminal or subconscious bias, but I'm not impressed. And then regardless of who's calling plays, you have probably the greatest group of skilled players combined with obviously quarterback in power five or power four, right? Like you have Will Howard, who is not groundbreaking, but he's very good at quarterback. He's dual threat, which is nice. He's not elite throwing, but he's good enough for sure. Good runner, big runner. Then you have Quinshon. Then you have Trevion. Then you have Carnell Tate, who I know guys at C2C really like. You have a bunch of four and five star receivers. Like there's a lot of talent here. How do you spread that around? Right.
For sure.
I think Ethan said, hey, like he doesn't believe the efficiency is going to be as high as it should be to help with potentially lower targets and lower usage for some of these guys. I agree fully. Not to mention Ryan Day with a super soft schedule. He's going to sit these guys whenever he can. Oh, you're banged up and you're 80%. You're going to sit, you know, like, so that is my concern out of a top two, three round player. A lot of different ways I went there, but I guess where do you sit with that? And is there one that you feel is the most strongest, pro or anti?
I mean, I'm you're right that you went a lot of different directions with it. And in my mind, there's a lot of different directions to go with this. Cause like, we'll start with the claim that you just made about like, you know, Ryan Day being notorious for sitting guys when they're not 100%. That's going to be even more true in a year where we're getting the 12 team playoff, right? He specifically, like Ohio State spent millions bringing back Trevion, convincing Egbuka to come back, getting one of the top quarterbacks out of the portal. They're gunning for a championship this year. He knows that the prize is at the end. The prize is the playoff game. So those regular season games where all that matters is that you get the win and get out and you make sure you don't lose. Again, in the 12-team playoff, you just make sure you don't lose three games in a year. You'd rather take two L's because you sat some of your top stars than get to the end of the season undefeated, but literally every single one of your stars is out due to injury because you played them every single game. Ryan Day knows that, and I think it makes it even more likely that he will sit a guy like Egbuka. So that's one point there. The other point is, like, when I first brought up this wide receiver situation back all the way to the way too early special, I talked about I loved the value I got Tate in, like, the sixth round. And obviously things have changed since then. Chip Kelly being the offensive coordinator now definitely changes things. But the opposite of what I wanted to happen happened, where I was hoping that would convince people, like, hey, Tate's in the right spot. Egbuka is the one who needs to come down, because I pointed out just the huge gap between the two. But no, Tate started going up, and then Mecha is stuck in that second round. I'm like, no, that's not what I wanted to happen here at all. Because quite frankly, the Ohio State wide receivers are great. That's only because of the amount of points they're able to put up and the amount of touchdown opportunities they get. In terms of volume, which I'm a volume believer, we talk about the Ohio State slot receiver being like, oh, this is a wonderful spot. They've never gotten more than 95 regular season targets. I've talked about before, 100 is where I really want, is where I want to get. 120 is like elite tier. That's what I'm aiming for in those first couple of rounds. Egbuka is still a really good wide receiver. Love the talent. He's probably going to get that close to that 95 targets again, which makes him a CFF asset, but not in the second round, not in the 1-2 turn there. I'm not in on Emeka Ibuka at all at his price. I'm out. Moving forward.
And he had a lot of subpar games last year. Like, I know Marvin Harrison was like a dog, and what's his name that transferred to Syracuse? McCord. Like, he wasn't, it felt like McCord just dropped back and chucked it up in the air to Marvin Harrison every time. But like, he threw it 25 to 30 times a game, right? Like, and Emeka still was unimpressive and wasn't worth rostering basically at all after October 1, which is not what you want out of a top round receiver. So I'm very, very quick to fade a Buckeye. That's for sure.
Now, I called Egbuka the biggest bust at receiver for CFF last year. And it's kind of crazy, in my opinion, that he jumped right back up into that first, second round range. And I'm like, there's injury concerns for sure. And like, he can bounce back from that. There's no Marvin Harrison anymore. But the situation does not line up for him to finish in that same range again. So, all right. My wide receiver that I'm too high on is, once again, talking relativeness here. I love the talent here. I love the landing spot of this. But we got to talk about where Evan Stewart, former wide receiver out of Texas A&M, now at Oregon, is going. On average, his ADP is 11.4. First round wide receiver. I'm not saying drop Stewart 2 to 3 rounds here. What I am saying is don't draft a transfer wide receiver or running back in the first round. Period. End of sentence. There's too many known players to take that risk on that early on in your draft. Quarterbacks are usually okay transferring, again, especially once their job's pretty secure, just because of the nature of their position. They're not competing down with other guys. Meanwhile, running backs and wide receivers, things get a lot more volatile, especially if there's serious competition already waiting for them at their new school, which there is in the case of Evan Stewart. Again, I think Evan Stewart's a more talented receiver, but Tez Johnson's still there at Oregon. They've proven they can feed two wide receivers and everything, but still, to go first round with him, I think, is a big misutilization of your early round draft capital, right? Like, let's look at some of the transfer wide receivers and where they've gone in drafts recently. So, like, 2013, Devontae Walker, good pick, but he wasn't the first. He was the first transfer wide receiver off the board. He was in the third round. If Evan Stewart was going off in the third round, I would have no qualms. I would even say that would be a value at that point because of how much I like the landing spot. Jamari Thrash, third round as well. Also a good pick, in my opinion, before he got hurt. But again, third round, not first round value there. Dorian Singer, fifth rounder. Yikes. Woof. Completely missed on that one. And that one looked really, really good in terms of a landing spot and talent there as well. Again, I love his talent. I love the system. I like the two combined, which is why I still have Evan Stewart in my top 10 wide receivers. But I don't think you should be spending a first rounder on someone that's barely started his first couple of weeks of practice with his new team. Like, it doesn't make sense to me to draft Stewart over really proven guys like Jalen Royals, Torrey Horton, even Luther Burden. In some drafts, I've seen Evan Stewart come off as the second wide receiver off the board. That makes no sense, in my opinion, why you would ever go with Stewart over a guy like Luther Burden or the other two guys I mentioned, Royals and Horton. So it's relative. I'm not saying like completely fade Stewart. I would like to see him fall into that late second, early third range for me to feel comfortable with his value. What do you think, Kay?
I think you're never going to get Evan Stewart in a draft, which is totally fine. If that is your like where you put the foot down, and if you believe the numbers play to your advantages, right? It's kind of like blackjack. Hey, I play by this rule every single time of how I play blackjack. That's how it's going to produce in the most positive way for me. I totally respect it. This is probably the most we're going to disagree today. Well, I shouldn't say that. This is the first time we disagree today, but it's not like I'm talking I wouldn't take him at like 10, 11, 12th overall. I would take him 15, 16, 17 overall. Like, I do agree. I would prefer Royals. I would prefer Horton, Burden, obviously. But then we get this weird kind of gap of like Ricky White, who I really like, but like quarterback is going to be that quarterback play could really hurt him.
For
I
sure.
don't like Igbuka. Sean Atkins is a really interesting guy at that spot. And at that point, that's where I'm like, okay, well, I would have to take Stewart, right? Oregon has last year had two guys with over 1,100 yards and 10 touchdowns. I am a big Bo Nix guy. I don't know how Dylan Gabriel can't do something similar. He feels kind of like a left-handed version of Bo Nix. The coaching staff is very like, it's continued. They're still there, obviously. So I do agree. I would wait a little bit, four, five, six picks. I'd probably just go running back or something like that instead of just taking a receiver. But I can see why you would avoid it, right? I thought Dorian Singer was gonna be awesome at USC. Why wouldn't he, right? And then he completely wasn't. So like, I can get where you're coming from. This is probably the first time we're gonna disagree, but it's gonna be by just barely.
Like I said, I'm not saying like, oh, Evan Stewart is a complete like waste of a value. Like I get why people want to draft him as high as they're doing right now. I'm just saying from my perspective, like those first two rounds, those two picks are so valuable. We talked about it earlier that like especially on that back end right there, right? Like picks like 8 through 12 on that 1-2 turn, like you can land some really, really elite options. Just known options at running back and wide receiver, and then you let the guys who are on the back half of the second round, let them take the risks on some of these guys that seem really, really great. So that's my
I will
thoughts.
say
Go
a
ahead.
real quick add on it that he falls in that gap of eight to 12th overall pick, in the first round, that you do have some really sure-handed, really great picks. And so like there is a question of why take the risk for somebody that's going to produce probably at best what we know RJ Harvey, Taj Brooks-ish. Those types are going to do automatically, like Royals and types. So it's like, well, why would I take this risk if I don't necessarily have to? Like, does Stewart have an upside that is that much better than these guys?
Yeah, I think
Probably not.
that was pretty much my point. Now, I'll
Yeah.
play devil's advocate with myself in that when you're on that 1-2 turn, because you have so many great options there, if you were to pair Evan Stewart with like an RJ Harvey, or like you took him at the end of the first round, you pair him with like a Taj Brooks, you know for a fact you have at least one other elite option there in the first couple of rounds. So you're willing to take a little bit more risk because you've already kind of gotten your safe pick out of the way with somebody else. So, a couple honorable mentions I w could have thrown up on today and everything like that. Haynes King, quarterback out of Georgia Tech. Jalen Buckley, I really thought about doing as the running back, but again, we just talked about that last week with our G5 coaching staff changes. So, if you want to know why I am fading Jalen Buckley at his current cost right now, go listen to that last week. And then Trey Harris is the wide receiver I'd probably say is like the next one up that I think is going a little bit too high just because of the amount of competition going on for targets over there at Ole Miss. And also Lane Kiffin typically likes to spread it out, even though Trey Harris had a phenomenal start to last year. Okay, before we move on to players that we think are going too low, anybody that you are anybody any kind of honorable mentions that you can see off the top of your head that you were kind of thinking about?
Not really. I think Haynes King is the one that like has been shown a bright eye. I think it was Mitch that mentioned in on Twitter, like, hey, I
No,
think he's got an
Heath.
extra. Oh, Heath, that's what it was. Heath Boyd. Yeah. He's got an extra. I think he's got an extra bye week, and he also has like two incredibly difficult games, like at Georgia and somebody else. So then it's like, oh man, are we stacking up like games that I pretty much can't count on a quarterback? Which is kind of like a little bit of like Caleb Williams from last year, where he had two byes and one of them was championship
Championship.
week. So you have to take that in consideration. So I would say he's the glaring one that was not mentioned in my group of listings. So yeah.
Alrighty. Well, let's turn positive, Kay. Let's talk about some guys that we think are going too low, some guys that we think people should be happier about in terms of where they're getting at in drafts. So we'll start with your quarterback, Kay. Who do you think is going too low?
Oh, this is about as homer as it gets. Kyren Drones, right?
I was about to say, I have to give your homer card back here.
I have done a my guy for years. I would pick Kyren Drones, but he is a Virginia Tech guy. After I picked a Michigan guy, after I picked a former Auburn guy, after I picked a former Virginia Tech guy. Sure, some of them have worked out really well, but like I will have him in basically every single draft. I don't know at this, what is he, 26? I don't know 26. How he doesn't, that is his absolute floor to me, unless he gets hurt or something that we can't predict, right? He's 6'2", 230. He had only five rushing touchdowns last year on 166 carries, 800 rushing yards. He was more than adequate through the air. They play at one of the softest schedules that you'll see, especially in the ACC. Mm-hmm. They return pretty much everybody on offense. Every single receiver's back. They lose like two depth pieces at running back and our Mox and I's favorite Baquan, right, yep, at tight end to Ole Miss. He returns everything. I mean, if you looked at his numbers last year, quarterback 42, and he basically played like
10 games.
9.5 games. Yeah, like the one game, I think, against Rutgers, you could consider, I can't remember exactly, he might have played half. He might have played full. The guy is about as like surefire to me as it gets. I have him inside of my top 10 at quarterback. Biased, I don't care. This is right up my alley of my type, you know, like give me a runner, give me an adequate thrower. I would be floored if he doesn't hit quarterback 26. I'm just, five rushing attempts on 166 carries, like you can't possibly do that again, right? That touchdown rate is insanely low for his mm-hmm. size. It's not like he's 5'11", 180. He's a bigger guy. So
where'd I go with this? No, I think QB10's a little high, but I'm actually more in consensus with ADP here. I got him as my QB28. I love him in best ball. My problem is I don't trust Virginia Tech and their coaching staff to consistently put their guys in position to score well in every single game. Because even after Drones got himself the job and everything like that, man, there were some stinkers, right? Like, what is this, week six, I think it was? No, wait, hold on.
I mean, he stunk against Florida State and he stunk against Louisville. Like, without a shadow of a doubt, he was like, just absolutely
had some
awful.
Really, really bad games. Now, granted, hopefully second year, you're looking at him being more consistent again. But also at the same time, second year, everybody's got some game film on him now, so there's something else to think about there. But if you extrapolate what he's able to do in the last 10 games Virginia Tech played and put it to 12, you're looking at a QB 29 range. I think that is perfectly reasonable to expect him. He's, I think, obviously going to do better than what he did last year. He's a great QB to have on your team because of the fact that he can score 40 points in a single game, which is obviously always something you want to have. My thing, again, I just don't really trust Virginia Tech's coaching staff to put him in a place where he's going to produce every single week for me, and that's something I want in that top-end range as my first quarterback off the board. But yeah, the TD regression point is a very important one, I think.
Yeah, and real quickly, he did play the full game against Rutgers, so it was a full 10 games. They kind of toyed him around the beginning. I would argue that... I would argue that I just forgot my point. There was something I was going to mention about him that made me feel better about it. Oh, it was Tyler Bowen, though, the offensive coordinator. I think going into the year, right, like Brent Pry is a defensive guy and Tyler Bowen is known for like being a Jags tight end coach. Like who, mm-hmm. what does that even mean? Right. You look back deeper, Tyler Bowen was the offensive coordinator or like co guy at Penn State. And he ran quarterbacks. So consistently, Grant Wells ran 2 years ago, and he's not really that much of a runner, right?
True.
So you have to really hope that the offense gels or continues to gel, which I think it will. There's no reason for it not to. And it's a little bit like, for me, it's, regression to the, or I shouldn't say regression, or whatever the reverse of that is, right?
Like no, it's getting regression. More no, touchdowns. That, that, that,
oh, that's regression to the mean, right.
Yeah, regression to the mean.
Damn it, I hope Nate doesn't listen to this.
I
So
think
I
Box will
think
get
he'll
onto you for that more than
Max
anything
will
else.
definitely get on. He's kind of a vocab snob, I feel like. But I think he'll score more touchdowns. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. I
Yeah.
am willing to plant a flag on him. He's not going to be my only guy. I have another guy or two in the mix.
How many yards did he rush last year?
It's like 818, I
800?
think,
818. So
in
again,
10
if
games.
he scored, if he scored 5 touchdowns, you're probably looking at 3 more. So again, that puts him another 18 points up. Yeah, I mean that gets him. If you include extrapolating it out to 12 games and you add 3 more touchdowns to kind of make up for that and everything, yeah, you're probably looking at him getting into QB 22, 24-ish range. I think that's probably a bit more fair. I think he's a great kind of QB2 grab, an excellent QB3 grab in most drafts.
Yeah, my top 10 is aggressive for sure.
Yes.
I'm not going to disagree with
You got
that.
Chandler Morris in your top 10 too, don't you?
I do. I feel
Just
like
to give
top
people an
12.
idea of like what your top
Yeah.
10 looks like.
My top, I think this goes to my original point at the very beginning. Give me a pool of 20 quarterbacks. I think we'll find 100 different ways to rank them.
Oh,
Like,
for
I just think
sure.
there's that many
And your
good
phil
quarterbacks and weird good situations. And the quarterback play is only going to get better as this transfer portal continues to be as wild as it ever gets.
No, and to your point, like your top or your quarterback ranking specifically in that second tier of guys, your philosophy is, all right, if I'm going to have this massive pool of guys here, the guys with the highest upside should go first. Right? Like I'm not going to put the safe guys that I'm not going to rank these guys as if like, all right, this is where I actually think they're going to finish. I'm going to rank these guys as like, hey, if things hit for Kyron Jones, he's a top eight, he's a top five quarterback in CFF this year. Versus like you're not going to think the same way with Garrett Nussmeier, right? Like if everything hits for Garrett Nussmeier, he's probably what at best a QB 20, right?
Yeah.
So you're going to rank a guy like Drones, even though there's potentially a lower floor than a guy like Garrett Nussmeier. So, all right, let's look at my quarterback. I think is going too low, and that's Miller Moss, quarterback over at USC. Currently QB 23. He's my quarterback 12. I get it on some level. Moss isn't Caleb Williams. Not Kyler Murray, he's not Jalen Hurts, right? Like, probably, I would say on paper, the least talented quarterback that Riley's had to work with in a good bit. But at the same time, CFF, we love our systems. He's still a Lincoln Riley quarterback. And you're to be able to get that in the end of the ninth, 10th round to me is absolutely insane. There's a lot to like in terms of what we've seen out of Miller Moss here pretty recently, right? Chased off Malachi Nelson. Now, granted, I don't think that's entirely because of Moss. I think there was a breakdown between Riley and Nelson there. But he did manage to chase off Will Howard, who USC was looking at as the potential quarterback to bring in for next year after he did an exceptional job in the bowl game against Louisville. Obviously, you don't really want to take too much away from bowl games, as we kind of mentioned with Noah Fifita earlier. But he diced up a really good Louisville defense to the tune of 372 yards and 6 touchdowns. Like, again, do I think he's going to do that every single week? Absolutely not. But it's enough to prove to me that he can do well in this system now that he's had a couple of years to kind of sit there and cook in the kitchen before they actually put him out there to serve. So, kind of the main thing to me is that if I thought he was going to be Caleb Williams, if I thought he was going to be Jalen Hurts, or if I thought he was going to be Kyler Murray, yeah, I'd be drafting him in like the first round. There'd be no doubt about that, in my opinion. But for him to drop all the way to almost QB2, QB3 range down to round 10 just doesn't make much sense, even when you account for the fact that I don't think he's going to run nearly as much as a lot of those other quarterbacks came before him. It's not part of his skill set. Wasn't in high school, doesn't really. Hasn't really shown it at USC outside of some third down scrambles here and there. Chris, you were talking about upside, right? Moss is currently going behind quarterbacks like Joey Aguilar, TJ Finley, Chandler Morris, Cameron Ward, Seth Hennigan. What? What? If you're looking
Yeah,
for
he's
upside,
a.
those are the guys, like he's going behind some really, really like safe, low, high floor, low ceiling guys. Meanwhile, I'm happy to take Moss as my third quarterback. I've done so in a couple of drafts so far.
Yeah, he's an interesting case because the system's unbeatable, right? Like, that's the system's tried and true every year. Good quarterback play, production wise, right? I am in that mid 20s range. It is such a tough situation because I do think Moss probably has more rushing in him than we think. USC probably scores more touchdowns than we probably think as well, and he might just luck into a couple scrambles for rushing touchdowns, right?
I
He's
agree.
not this he's not a big guy, but he's pretty fleet of foot. He moves pretty well. They spread it out so much. If he's a little bit of a dancer, maybe he gets a couple short touchdowns. I would say my concern with him is like, man, he's got a lot of unproven guys at receiver, right?
Fair
Like
enough.
Deuce, Branch, Kyron Hudson. I mean, like guys that really haven't shown a whole lot, but I'm not going to put too much stock in it due to stars, due to Branch looking good, Deuce being a prospect of high quality. It'll be tough. I have him more in my mid-20s because of like some of these other guys better. He doesn't fit my typical mold of quarterback, like I've mentioned, but I don't hate it by any means. I certainly think at the very least that quarterback 23 is very fair. And Lincoln Riley produces guys, right? So there's probably some upside in that tank there.
No, I definitely agree, but just like in a vacuum, if I ever told you in any year, okay, that you could get the Lincoln Riley quarterback in round 10 of a draft, that sentence by itself just feels insane, doesn't it? Even with him being QB23, like obviously I think that's a product of just this year quarterbacks going later and everything like that, because usually typically QB23 wouldn't be 10th round. But still, just to say that like he is going in the 10th round feels insane.
It is insane. I don't know. You could look back and try to figure it out. It has to be a long time before a quarterback for Lincoln Riley was picked past like the sixth, seventh, eighth round, right? Like,
Exactly.
I mean, he pretty
Even
much
Kyle
he produces
McCord
it.
last year, right? Like maybe this is what's scaring people off a little bit. Like we knew that Kyle McCord wasn't going to be CJ Stroud, wasn't going to be Justin Fields, but even he was still being picked in like the sixth, seventh round, like fifth round in some drafts. Like that was the range he was kind of going in. Like did he scare us off enough that when we start to think like, oh, but this guy isn't as talented, even though we like the system, that we're going to drop that quarterback, that system's quarterback 9 rounds? Doesn't make sense in my head.
Do you think he's got 40 touchdown potential?
I think so. Especially if Jaquavius Marks gets injured again and everything, and they have less options in that backfield. Like, why not?
That's fair. If you think that he's got 40 touchdown potential, you should take him every single time. I mean,
That's what
because
I
I
have.
think
I've taken him
the
a lot
floor
so
is
far.
solid. The floor is there where it's like, barring an injury, there's no reason for him not to produce to quarterback 35 at the very, very worst, right? And you're not spending a ton on him. So yeah, I don't have a problem with it. This feels fairly accurate for me, but yeah, so it's good. I don't mind him.
All right, let's look at your running back here, Kay. I'm interested in this one because you're staking your claim that we got the wrong guy in a very productive CFF backfield so far. So I'm curious to see what your case is for this man. Who's your running back that's going too low, Kay?
It's Braylon McReynolds from South Alabama. He's like 99. Yeah. So he's pretty much just like guy that somebody picks because whatever at the very end. I'm not sold on. I took Bullock in this best ball that I'm in, and then I started thinking about it. I'm like, wait a second. Like, why is he still here? Why was he still here? Am I thinking about this wrong? I looked at the bowl game, which is tough because it's Eastern Michigan, it's a bowl game, but like McReynolds was the second running back in for two consecutive drives at the very beginning. McReynolds is not the size guy, right? Bullock is the guy that would have a size comparison, or at least be stout enough to be compared to like a for a true RB1, like a full, like a bell cow type. But like McReynolds catches the shit out of some passes.
He
18
does.
passes in 5 games. He looked pretty decent running the football. He's just smaller, 5'8", 180-ish. I think it's more likely that this is a running back by committee, and I think McReynolds is usage in the passing game is way better than RB99, with some potential that he gets 16, 17 touches a game. I mean, same offensive coordinator. I think if you ask some of the other guys out there, they would say that LaDainian Webb might be a kind of a one-off in terms of like bell cow versus previous usage of running backs in a system for these guys at South Alabama, but I just kind of picked him as a guy to highlight a too high and a too low in a sense. I think Bullock ultimately, I shouldn't have picked him in round 10 or whatever it was. And McReynolds should be shot up more than like the RB99, considering which should be a very good offense. I really like Gio Lopez,
Yep.
and he's very effective in the passing game. So I like McReynolds. And I think ultimately his pass game usage is like what puts him, very usable in a RB by committee.
So I'll tell you where I agree. And that is, I think that I like Kentrell Bullock. He's not going to be a LaDainian Webb. LaDainian Webb's been a top 20 CFF running back for the last 2 years. I have Kentrell Bullock as my RB35, and I think that's probably fair. He's definitely going to be a tier lower than LaDainian Webb, even in the best case scenario, right? You mentioned Gio Lopez. Gio Lopez is going to take away some of those touchdown opportunities that Webb was basically handed on a silver platter last year, right? I think you're kind of reading the bowl game situation wrong just a little bit. Because Bullock was injured right at the end of the year, the one game where McReynolds got 19 carries, Bullock was out last game of the year. You come into the bowl game, you already mentioned it's Eastern Michigan, so that like South Alabama just toyed the crap out of Eastern Michigan during that game. And while McReynolds got the first carries and everything like that, I point that more to the fact that, again, Bullock was coming off of injury. They weren't going to throw out a guy coming off of injury right out there, especially when you have McReynolds, who performed admirably in the last game where he did kind of get that workload early on. So I think the size comparison is legitimate here. I know you make fun of me for being a sizes sometimes, K, but if you're looking for a guy that they can trust with 20 touches in a game, who are they going to trust more probably when all else is even? The 5'11, 200 pound guy or the 5'8, 180 guy? Probably the 5'11, 200 pound guy.
Definitely.
I agree that McReynolds is going to play a part, right? He is a better pass catcher. He makes sense as Bullock's in there for downs one and two. They're in third and five, third and six. They throw McReynolds out there in case they need to make a dump off pass to the running back and he has the better hands. For sure. I think McReynolds will be the reason why Bullock, like in addition to Gio Lopez, why Bullock will be a significant tier down from what we've gotten out of LaDainian Webb over the last couple of years. I am just not ready to say that I think he's going to get enough work in order to really make that jump up as a legitimate option for CFF. Does that make sense? Even as the RB2.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think we're pretty much on the same page with some slight differences. The thing is, you just never really know. There's so many injuries that happen throughout the season. You don't know where one guy truly stands. So
True.
it's not apples to apples to say, hey, this guy was the next man up, whether it's bowl game or midseason, about who. There's a lot that goes into it. I think for me, it's more like McReynolds is like a mid to late round flyer, is just really, maybe I don't hit on some of the high floor guys at the beginning for running backs. And so maybe I feel like, okay, well, I feel like I get 10 to 12 points weekly out of McReynolds because of the pass game usage, at the very least.
Part of the strategy, right, with some of those late round flyers and everything is that you grab guys where if you're sitting there thinking, like, all right, if this guy goes down ahead of him, kind of like a Catron Allen, right? Catron Allen's going much later than like Nico Singleton. But like, if you grab a guy like Catron Allen or even a Braylon McReynolds here, if Bullock goes down, McReynolds, we've already seen if Webb and Bullock were gone last year, McReynolds became a bell cow guy. They were still okay with making him a bell cow guy, even though he has a smaller stature, because it's a Sun Belt, right? Like he can handle that workload there. So I think that's part of what else can add to McReynolds' value, especially in those later drafts. So, all right, we'll look at my running back. I think is going too late here. And we're going to go to a tried and true CFF system. Love running the ball all over here. Got to talk about Mr. Caden Fagan, running back out of Illinois. With all of the true freshman running backs last year that performed really well for CFF, that have made big jumps in terms of CFF ADP this year, like think of your Darius Taylors, think of your CJ Baxters, guys like that. Fagan feels like he's just kind of stuck down in that, like, again, he's RB 57 in CFF, round 12 versus guys who are like, again, like Baxter and them who are going like first, second round. I'm not saying Fagan needs to go that high or anything like that, but his situation sets up really, really well. And if he is the main guy, you're looking at a really solid running back here for CFF. At Illinois, all that's left right now is Fagan and McCray. Reggie Love off to Purdue for some reason. And of those two, between Fagan and McCray, I'm rolling with Fagan. All right, during a three-week stretch, we saw that Fagan looked what he looked like in a workhorse role. Nothing crazy during that time, but in that three-week stretch, that was enough to put him on a top 24 RB pace for CFF. If he's able to keep that up the entire year, again, very, very solid, dependable back for you right there. And some of you might be saying, like, again, well, McCray is still there. He's been there longer. Like, aren't you worried about him potentially just kind of getting the RB1 role due to seniority? I'm not really worried because of two reasons. One, McCray hasn't played a full season since 2021. He has gotten injured in each of the last two seasons. It sucks, and I don't like kind of including that in my analysis. But in terms of like why I'd be okay with a guy like Fagan, that's something I have to factor in. And then two, McCray's just not super great. Like, he hasn't had a season where he's carried the ball for more than 4 yards a carry since his freshman year. Those injuries have been piling up for him in terms of what his ability is. Fagan obviously got injured last year, so it's something I got to keep an eye on there. But at the same time, he's got a big frame, 6'3", 250 pounds. Like, this is a dude that, like, has enough mass on him to where he should be able to deal with some blows better than a guy like McCray is. And then the other part of it is that between McCray and Fagan, Fagan's the better receiver of the two. Like, surprisingly, for a 6'3", 250-pound guy, 9 catches, 116 yards, and a touchdown last year versus McCray averaged 5 yards per catch last year. The Illinois top running back should not be going as RB57, basically is my point. He's going behind guys like Raheem Sanders, both of the Arizona running backs between Merritt and Conley. Roman Hemby, he's going behind. That doesn't make any sense to me. Montrell Johnson down at Florida. Like, if Fagan gets the RB1 role at Illinois and he gets a workhorse role, this is going to be insane value here in the 13th round. What about you, Kay? Disagree?
I would agree with you on this. You definitely want Illinois running backs. I don't think McCray has done enough to like scare me off of Fagan, a second year guy with big size, good hands, like you mentioned, shockingly good hands. He looked good enough in like the usage that he got last year when called upon. And this is pretty low. I mean, like the thing is, right, like the upside here is pretty strong. This is a guy that I feel like would fit the mold of a guy a few years past. I probably wouldn't target because there is some doubt, like technically, right, McCray could play his way into Fagan being a nobody. Mm-hmm. But I feel like this is the type of a guy that I would want to try to target this year, thinking I feel like I have a good read on him winning the job. This is a system that you want to have the running back with the job. This is a way too low of a price. I definitely would want him over Hemby. Who are you have a couple other names that are being drafted around him just for like comparison's sake?
Raheem Sanders, both of the Arizona backs, Montrell Johnson.
That's, you know, Raheem Sanders, man, RIP. Like, what happened? I know, right? That's tough. That's tough to swallow. If you did like a dynasty startup last year, you're just really struggling with that Raheem Sanders pick. Those feel like decent guys, but I would take Fagan over all those for sure. Give me at least the upside of like a lone Illinois running back, right? So
I agree.
I'm with you on this one.
Probably the worst case scenario that can happen here is what happened with Rutgers last year, where we all like Samuel Brown coming in year two, coming off injury, and being like, oh, Kyle Manunga hasn't really done anything over there. And that could happen again here, where it's like, oh, Josh McCray's been injured. Fagan looks so much better than him. And then we get into the year, just McCray takes the number one job and just doesn't look back from there. So now, granted, also Sam Brown never really got healthy last year, so that's part of it, but still.
Right.
But all right. Looking at your wide receiver that you think is too low, Kay. There's a name I have on the screen, but really you're just talking about the whole wide receiver room in general here. So who are you looking at?
Kind of. It's the Bama guys, right? You have to flip the image for me. Perfect. Yeah. Kobe Prentice and Jeremy Bernard, right? I think there's reasons to like both, right? Prentice was pretty good in limited time. He is super young too, if I remember right.
Oh, yeah.
Jeremy Bernard comes over with DeBoer, so there's some familiarity with the offense. I think if you're thinking like, if you don't take one of these two guys that essentially, I think they're back to back, right? Like
They are.
receiver 63, 64. If you're not taking one of these guys at this position, then like you just don't think this offense will be any good.
Pretty
Like
much.
who was, or you better take the running back. Like there's no way a Bama offense is going to be any sort of successful to me without one of those three being awesome, right? And I think Bernard has a good reason. I think Prentice has a good reason. And you know, it feels almost like a cop out to say, hey, one of these two, but round 12, you know, like just pick one, just alternate which one you want. I think this offense is one that you want. I do think it'll kind of transform into Milroe's skill set, but he's still going to produce receivers. There's still going to be a bunch of points scored. It's still going to be a successful offense. They still have a bunch of guys, you know. So I think that you'd be crazy not to take Bernard or Prentice at the 11, 12, 13th round range, you know, like. If you feel like that risk averse, just take someone early, you know, take a couple guys early at receiver that you feel make it a little bit safer to take a risk lower, you know, lower down the draft.
See, I find it so funny that people like think of this as a risk, right? Like, how high would Jeremy Bernard be drafted if he and Kalen DeBoer were still at
We're
Washington?
back at like if you just had said, hey, adequate quarterback with DeBoer and Bernard is like the returner and like
And they're just
bunch
still at
of
Washington,
random
right?
types.
Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't get him past the fourth round at the very most conservative guess, right? I
So
think
like
you're in agreement there.
Like yeah, like what's stopping people from taking the shot here at Alabama, right? Like I get it. Some people might be worried about Miller's ability to consistently produce wide receiver with his passing abilities, but those same people probably would have been concerned about Michael Penix in 2022, right? Because again, like he was coming off a year, he was injured. Always people kind of thought of him as like a run first quarterback and everything like that. Now, granted, he'd worked with Kalen DeBoer before, but even still, right? Like this system just produces wide receivers, and he doesn't need great quarterbacks to really make it happen. Like 2023 last year, Rome Odunze, wide receiver 2. Jalen Polk, wide receiver 10 through week 11 before he had that really weird collapse the last 2 weeks where he didn't catch a single ball. And then McMillan was wide receiver 7 through week 3 before he got injured. And then the year before that, Rome Odunze, wide receiver 17, McMillan, wide receiver 18, right? Like, this system just produces wide receivers over and over again. And to your point, Kay, like you're like saying like, oh, like Bernard, Prentice, like it really is just take your pick of those two, right? This is a system that like it could be that both of those guys make really, really or become really, really good CFF assets. Now, granted, usually it's one slot guy, one outside guy. So, and both Bernard and Prentice typically hang out in the slot, if I remember correctly. So they could probably eat into each other a little bit there. Maybe take a look at some of those outside guys. Jalen Hill, anybody?
I wonder if DeBoer comes in though and says, based on how I view an offense, you know, I can move Prentice or I can move
Oh, for sure.
Jeremy.
No, that's absolutely
You know,
possible.
I think there is that possibility as well.
I agree.
So
100%. And then another point here, Kay, like again, you were talking about 12th round. Let me name off some of the running backs that are going in this range, or running backs, excuse me, wide receivers. Josiah Freeman, Jay Macklin, now at Kentucky, Jabre Barber, the Troy transfer to Texas A&M, Deion Burks, Chris Mitchell at Notre Dame, like Devin McEwen at UTSA, and I like Devin McEwen, but guys, there's no way McEwen should ever go ahead of the first Bama wide receiver off the board. Makes no sense in terms of why these guys are going so late.
yeah, I agree.
All right, last guy we'll touch on here. Again, this one's interesting because my actual ranking of him and ADP are actually not that far apart, but this is kind of like your thing, Kay, where you're kind of using your too low to emphasize a guy that's going too high in your opinion. So I'm gonna do that here with Kyren Lacy and really the LSU wide receiver room here. ADP is wide receiver 45. I have Lacy as my wide receiver 40. Yes, my different, like I said, the difference between ADP and ranking are relatively minuscule, but where Lacy's getting drafted compared to CJ Daniels does not make any sense at all in my mind. Lacy's ADP, like I said, wide receiver 45, 10th round. TJ Daniels is going wide receiver 26, and that's in the sixth round. 4 rounds difference between these two is absolutely insane in my mind. Again, and I like CJ Daniels. I think he's very, very solid. But Lacy's been with the Tigers for 2 seasons now and has started for both. He's become a very versatile weapon for them, moving all over the field, kind of plays that same role as like Malik Nabers had last year, where he can be in the slot and the outside wherever they need to use him, wherever they can get that mismatch. He's going to go there. He's got a really solid size, 6'3", 215. If you subscribe to the year 1-0 theory, right, like Lacy produced as a freshman, so like there isn't this idea that he's going to be capped off at some point. He can only get so far. No, he has the ceiling to continuously be a wide receiver at worst, two for LSU. And we saw they can produce two top 10 wide receivers to CFF last year. Now, do I think that's going to happen again? Probably not. Like, it's rare we see two guys monopolize the targets like we saw Malik Nabers and Bryant Thomas do last year. But Lacy's pretty much going to step right into, my opinion, one of those top two roles, right? They leave open a ton of targets. CJ Daniels, again, I like him, but to draft him in the sixth round versus Lacy going in the 10th round, like you're believing that CJ Daniels is like this ultimate hidden gem that's going to surpass everybody on the LSU depth chart immediately the moment he gets in there versus a guy like Lacy's been there for a couple years now. I don't know. The difference between these two is absolutely mind-blowing in my mind. I almost am starting to, like, again, I've started drafting Lacy in a ton of my leagues because I just don't see how he doesn't end up one of the top two targets, and especially with a better passing game through Garrett Nussmeier, he'll benefit greatly from that. So, okay, your thoughts? I kind of meandered a little bit there with some of my reasoning, but...
Well, I don't agree, but at least you're going after a guy in a great system, right? Like, at least I can't fault you for that, at least. This is just where it's personal ideas of, like, where the receiver rankings end up. You tend to not like the transfer, which is totally fair. We've already talked about it. CJ Daniels is that transfer from a G5. Like, Liberty played about as bad of a schedule as it gets. Mm-hmm. Like literally, I don't think there's anybody else that played a worse schedule, right, last year. You know, Jaden Daniels, I know his rushing ability, like, put him way over the top of everybody, like, by far. But, like, yeah, he still threw really, really well.
He did.
The nice thing about it is that Nussmeier is a thrower. You're kind of almost hoping for, like, 85% Joe Burrow type passing and not much running at all, obviously, from Nussmeier. I have a hard time thinking that this is too low. I'm curious, maybe, though, sometimes it's really about who are you talking about is around him. So I guess my question to you would be, who are some of the names ahead of him? Who's like 40 to 44?
So let me take a look here. All right. So again, I mentioned earlier, Jay Macklin, Josiah Freeman, those are two guys that are going too high in my opinion, but like Isaiah Bond's going ahead of him. You got Nick Anderson of Oklahoma is going around ahead of him. You got coming after him.
So what I definitely the first two, what, Freeman and Macklin, I would agree. Yeah, give me Lacy at least. Like, I'll take a shot at like this hyper incredible offense. Now, but then if you look at like Bond, you look at the other guy you mentioned, it's like, now I'm just taking who I think is going to win a prominent receiver role in a great passing offense, right? Bond, Texas. So it'll be interesting to see what people end up doing, winning jobs and stuff. We're super early on is the thing, right? So we'll see. I still am not in on Lacy, but it is interesting to see some of these other options. Some guys I definitely would take Lacy over. Some guys I would, just personal preference, grab the other.
Yeah, again, to me, this is one of those situations where we're falling in love with the shiny new toy a little bit too much compared to the guys that are already there and have been in the system for a couple of years now. Again, I think that Lacy should jump up into the sixth round along with Daniels? No, this is kind of similar to the Ohio State receiver situation I talked about earlier, where I'd much rather see Daniels drop back a few rounds because I think, but to me, it's like, I'm just asking people, just make it consistent. I think these two should go right next to each other or right near each other in drafts because you're either betting on one, the talent that you think CJ Daniels has, or you're betting on Kyren Lacy having the experience in the system the last couple of years, both of which, in my opinion, warrant them being drafted in CFF drafts, I just don't think that either one really puts one of them, one or another, way above the other one. So, all right, a couple of honorable mentions I'll throw out here. There's a lot of running backs and wide receivers I think that go way too late, so I'm just going to list off a bunch of names here. Jez Malusi, Chip Troyanum, Nathan Carter, Harrison Whaley, Ricky Hunt, Caleb Jackson of LSU, like all, what is that name, like six guys there, like, go check out where they're going in drafts right now. I almost guarantee you all six of those guys will have their ADP rise over the next couple of months. That wide receiver, I was afraid to actually name some of these guys around Kyren Lacy because there's a whole group of wide receivers right here around the 10th round that, in my opinion, are going too late. Cole Wilson of Texas State, Rashad Owens, Oklahoma State, DeCorian Clark, UTSA, Landon Ransom Goals from Rice, and Malachi Fields from Virginia. All of them go in the same range as Lacy, and really just a whole bunch of guys there, in my opinion, that are going after this tier around the, God, what is it, 7th, 8th round, some of these wide receivers, where I'm just like, man, I don't think I've drafted a ton of wide receivers in that range because I let other people draft the Easton Mesters, the LaJonte Westers, the Will Shepherds, the Eric Singletons, the Caden Robinsons of the world, and I'm like, yeah, shoot, you guys take that. I'll take Rashad Owens and Lacy and Fields and Kobe Hudson's, all of that, and like near round 10. Fine by me. So those are my guys. What about you, Ken?
I don't have anybody to add. I think that's just a really good group, like the Owens, the Kobe Hudson's. Like, I think we'll see some of those guys rise as we get more data. But I mean, ultimately, we're in March 2nd or March 3rd, right? Like, there's so much time. It's good to get some drafts in us and start to see where people lie. And I think you could have mentioned in the beginning, like, you start to see, oh, somebody takes Kyren Jones as like the 12th quarterback off the board. Like, why? And then you start to spend time on, that's when you look into it, right? I have Nick Winning Edge's returning database up the entire time. The first thing I'm thinking about is like, okay, if I like or dislike a guy, I want to make sure that returning players, especially at quarterback, matches up with that. So interesting early times. This will be, I like, screenshot this and see where we're at, you know, May 1st, because I bet it will see some really big differences.
So it's funny you mentioned that, because I went back and looked. So Nate and I did this exact show right around this time last year, and I was curious just to see if we nailed some and lost some. We absolutely nailed some. Like Nate brought up Luther Burden. I forget, there's a couple that I had on there that I nailed, but the one that stuck out to me the most was when I brought up Trayshon Potts as a too low value. Because that was back when he's at Minnesota. Literally 2 weeks later, he transfers to Penn State. And I'm like, that's what happens.
I talked about it on Burning the Red Shirt this week. Like, there's so much that could happen with the portal.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there are some positions that are weak at some schools that need to get some help. And those Washington ADPs are going to be wild, right? Like, PJ Hatter is a great one. We have him at like the top 20, but like, he won't get picked again, right? Because
no, I agree. Transferred, yeah,
there. So it's interesting. We'll see some guys get moved around, and this is what makes this fun to chat about it.
Yeah, good call there. I meant to point that out when I first threw up the ADP, saying that, like, guys, there's going to be some changes here because, like, PJ Hatter is currently QB 15. There's no way anybody's drafting him after Jordan McLeod gets there. So I agree. Very good point there. Okay, 30 seconds or less. What was your main takeaway from today?
Man, I think it's the quarterbacks. It's the quarterbacks. I think, man, you better be on them because everybody's going to be taking the same guys in rounds, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 for running backs and receivers. And so you better be right on quarterbacks. That feels like the current way to differentiate yourself is to find a system, a style, a type, and nail it, right?
I agree.
Because we're all going to have the same flex guys. It's just there's 3 quarterbacks and then about 20 to 30 guys that we can all debate over. So that's mine. What about you?
For me, it really is like realizing how much there is still to learn. Like, as much as we think we understand a lot of these players and their systems and the rooms that they're in and everything like that, like, even, like, when you brought up the Braylon McReynolds thing, right? Like, at first, I was just like, really? Are we going to try to say that Kentrell Bullock isn't going to be the number one guy at South Alabama? But then I checked myself. I'm like, yeah, like, that's the kind of questions we should be asking on the 2nd of March, 2024, right? Like, there's, what, 5 months until these actual seasons get started. Like you mentioned, the spring portal is going to change everything. We're going to have guys go down with injury. Like, nobody should ever feel like that this is all set in stone at this point. These things are going to shift around. We'll talk about ADP again at some point this offseason, and there's going to be guys that we think are too low right now that we might be saying are too high just a couple months from now. So definitely something to keep an eye on, and really just, to me, highlights how much we still have yet to learn. So, Kay, real quick, what are you doing at C2C with you know, baby duty and everything like that? You got anything else coming out for us, or you got Burning the Red Shirt content coming out? What do you got?
I am not sure if it's been posted. I don't think it has. I just put together a probably won't. We'll see what happens. Quarterback battles is like my last one. I focused on three quarterback battles where I think there's kind of a clear winner of the battle, and there's like an extreme ADP value currently. This is the time of the year where, like, if you feel good about a battle and you're in a best ball, like, take advantage of it, because once that decision is made, the value goes out the window. So I have that going on, try to do some podcasts, obviously, with Burning the Red Shirt more consistently, and just whatever comes to mind, whatever I see that might spark a interest in an article the next couple of months, I'm going to try and pump some out. You know, I got to pay for daycare here shortly. So I got to get some articles in to help afford that.
Absolutely. And again, Kay does a fantastic job with each of his articles. They're relatively quick and easy reads, so you're not opening it up and finding yourself in a novel. He's very good about making sure that you can get quick in and out information, actionable information. So go check out his stuff over at Campus Canton. And also check out, of course, Burning the Red Shirt, where he and Andrew Katz and sometimes Zach every once in a while have a great time over there. Love listening to them. In terms of what we got going on in CTN and everything, pretty much the same old, same old. Again, we're talking ADP here. We got the drafts going on. If you want to get involved in the best ball, please reach out to me at @CFF_Jared. Spring camps are they're already started, really, but like, we haven't gotten a ton of information out of them yet. So probably starting next week, we're really going to go around the country, start looking at what we're hearing, and then get ready for spring game season where we overreact to everything. So until then, really appreciate all of you guys. Kay, appreciate you, and I hope you guys have a wonderful and fantastic weekend. See y'all.